This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. When the U.S. Supreme Court struck down the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, President Obama instructed the federal government to resolve any policies that stood in the way of recognizing gay marriage. It had a big impact on military couples' ability to get valuable benefits, including health care. And it means their committed relationships are no longer ignored by their employer. But that may not apply to the National Guard in Louisiana, Texas, and Mississippi because they claim it just doesn't apply to them. They say National Guard is a joint operation between state and federal governments, and those states have bans on same-sex marriage, so National Guard officials in those states say they will not recognize the status of gay couples. Here in North Carolina, the National Guard has chosen to acknowledge these relationships, this despite the fact that North Carolina itself has a ban on gay marriage. Joining us now to talk about this is Associated Press reporter Michael Biesecker. Michael, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank.
Also with us is Tracy Johnson. She's a North Carolina National Guard staff sergeant. Her wife, Donna, was one of three National Guard members killed in a Taliban suicide bomber attack in Afghanistan in October of last year. Tracy, welcome. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you. Thank you for the request.
Also with us is Chris Rousey. She's a National Guard liaison for the American Military Partner Association. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Tracy Johnson, first, let me say we are sorry for your loss. Would you mind would you mind telling us about your wife and what happened?
My wife was she's a very outgoing, loving person. If you knew her, you know, she let very few people in her inner circle, but you know, her heart was to, you know, help this unit that was going out the door and to help develop her professional, you know, skill set so she could serve her younger soldiers better. So, you know, she volunteered for this deployment. And, you know, I think everybody knows what happened after that. You know, they were just boots on the ground, you know, for a few weeks. And then this situation happened.
The situation happened, and it was reported in the press. You had your suspicions and your fears, but in fact, you were not notified, even though you were married.
Well, I wasn't notified first. I wasn't sure I was going to be notified because I understood the situation as it was, and I called her family to let them know that, hey, something's up, something's not right. You know, just be aware. Take any phone calls that are from unknown numbers, and that was what I was hoping we were going to get, not, you know, an official visit. And as it came down, you know, they actually came to give us the notification. I wasn't sure that I was on that list. And so I did rush over there with my marriage certificate just to say, you know, even if I wasn't going to get recognized at all, I wanted them to know what the situation was and for them to see my face. And if it turned out for the worse, at least they knew that they were hurting, you know, another soldier as well.
Right. And in fact, you were not on that list, and you had to find out, in fact, by through your in-laws. Is that right?
That's correct.
And your wife had a wedding ring, and they wouldn't turn that over to you.
Well, that was considered personal effects, and because we weren't recognized, that was given to her next of kin, and officially, they had to be turned over to her next of kin, so that would be correct. And her mother, God bless her, her family did ensure that I was her dignified escort. So it was very hard for me because I had, you know, I went up there and I had to take possession of all these belongings, and I knew I had to give them away. Mm-hmm. You know, and at the end of the day, you know, her mother gave them back to me, but, you know, every little step was shaky and uncertain.
And you're talking about the funeral, and of course, you would not have been permitted to go to that unless her mother invited you.
That's pretty much the way it all rolls downhill. I mean, I would not have even been acknowledged in the obituary if it had not been for her mother, because her mother was designated as the PAD, which is the person in charge of the disposition of remains. And if it had not have been for her blessing on a lot of small details, which people kind of seem to forget that it's all those small things that hurt the most, you know, you're right. I wouldn't have been, you know, listed as the spouse. I wouldn't have been allowed to go to the funeral, you know, sit, you know, or anything like that. So, absolutely.
And you decided to get married. As soon as the DOMA was defeated, you decided to get married. Tell us why you decided to do that.
Well, we decided to get married after the repeal, don't ask, don't tell. because we were both facing a deployment, and I don't know, it was just something, you know, we'd already been together for 6 years, and it was something that we could actually legally do now without putting our careers in jeopardy, and we wanted to do it. We initially were going to get married in October, but between time and work and money and circumstances and both of us spinning up for, you know, our National Guard deployments at that time, it got pushed back until February, and it just came down to the point where, like, you know, if we don't make this happen, it's not going to happen. So we pretty much eloped up to D.C. and, you know, and we're married, you know. And then subsequently, I got bumped from my deployment, which in the end was a good thing. But and then she went on to her deployment.
All right. So don't ask. The repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell allows you to get married and be public within the service. But still, you have no rights. You're not acknowledged as a couple until this executive order, which came much later. So
right. And we wasn't doing it. We were doing it for ourselves. You know, right. The marriage was for us. If that makes sense, it was to make our own hearts happy.
Right. But there are practical effects, aren't there? What are the differences for you if you were a partner not acknowledged as a widow in this case, in terms of real material benefits?
All right. If I was a partner not acknowledged, as the situation as it was, I mean, right. I'm not allowed for, you know, survival benefits from the Veteran Affairs, you know, and that also includes free health care and, you know, but there's a lot of things I am afforded because I am still a service member, which, you know, but, you know, I guess the biggest thing is the survivor's benefits and the free health care, you know, because I am going to be getting out at some point in time.
Michael Biesecker from the AP, give us the news out of North Carolina. What's the National Guard doing and why?
Well, when the military ordered that same-sex couples be recognized for federal benefits, I believe the order went out in August following the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act by the Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision. That order was being implemented this month, and it put the National Guards in each of the 50 states in a position of, were they going to recognize that order in light of their own state laws? National Guards are a little interesting in that they're both federal and that they're a part of the U.S. military, and they're also holdovers from the state militia. You know, they're under the command of the governor of the state. And the three states that you mentioned, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, the state governments in those states said, look, we have amendments that say we don't recognize same-sex unions. We don't recognize same-sex marriages. We're barred from doing it. And therefore, processing these applications that would be filed by soldiers and their spouses to be recognized for federal benefits, we can't even touch that paperwork. We can't process those applications in a state facility. So in those states, it's not that families, same-sex couples and their kids, which the benefits extend to, in those states won't get benefits. They just have to go to a federal facility to apply and receive those benefits. They can't do it at their National Guard barracks.
So does that mean that in those states as well, the families and beneficiaries in same-sex marriages would be able to get them?
That's correct. They will be able to get the benefits. They will just have to go to a federal facility to apply and have their applications processed.
So, Chris, we talked about some of those states that are trying to deny or at least say, well, does this strike you, Chris Rousey, as a barrier? Is it a kind of a statement? What's going on in those states, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, to name three, and I think others may still be considering it. What do you think is going on there?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. And first, I would actually contradict a little bit what Michael just said, and that the states will be giving the benefits. They just won't process the applications. That's not entirely true. We actually have documentation from the state of Texas where the adjutant general has sent to the attorney general there a request for legal opinion, and it includes actual benefits that they are questioning whether or not they can provide. So this is not just simply a matter of making it more inconvenient for our military members to go and apply for the benefits. This also actually applies to the receiving of some of those benefits, their participation in family support programs, A lot of the types of things that Tracy alluded to that she should have received as a spouse, they are questioning whether or not they can even supply those benefits. So I think it does extend to a lot more than just an inconvenience to these military members. And these are exactly the types of inequities that the American Military Partner Association is fighting to rectify. Because, quite frankly, I'm not buying the legal argument that these are state facilities and therefore they can't process the applications. It is true that National Guard units are joint state and federal agencies, but the vast majority of their resources, their funding, their their equipment, their personnel, their supplies are all federal funded. And in fact, the great majority of their personnel that are on hand on a daily basis, what we call their full-time personnel, their technicians, their active duty guardsmen, these are federal employees and active duty guardsmen, and they are paid directly from federal funds. So these are not state employees, they are federal employees. The equipment that they are using to process these applications is federally funded equipment. It's a federal software and hardware program. So their legal argument is just not carrying water with me.
But when the states say that they are most of the time under the governor's or under the state's control and only federalized when they're called to duty by the president, is there a question of them going back and forth under the authority of the state and the federal government, whoever paid for the equipment? Chris?
I don't think it's as simple as that. Most of what a guard unit does at any given point in time is in support of federal missions, federal training, federal priorities. The state governor can also activate his troops onto state active duty in support of state missions, such as disaster relief and those types of things. But on a day-to-day basis, it really is a joint mission. The resources are under the what we like to call sort of operational control of the state governor, but again, he's operationally controlling federal resources. So it's just not that clear cut. And certainly to deny those benefits, to play this political game, to try and score political points with the real lives, the real families of our service members who are risking their lives out there to defend the rights and freedoms of our of the citizens of our country, to turn around and then deny those same rights and freedoms to these members is just unconscionable.
And Michael, interestingly enough, there are states like North Carolina where the states have the National Guards have said no problem, we're going to do this, and they operate under the same authority and the same rules as Texas, Mississippi, and Louisiana, and they apparently are going to acknowledge, and there are other states as well in the same situation as North Carolina. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, the point that these are federal employees is an important one. Even the state of Texas can't stop the federal government from providing health care to its employees that it chooses to. And in this case, the Pentagon is saying, we're going to do this. How it's implemented on the ground in the states, there will be some variation. But my understanding is when it comes to those core family benefits, such as health care, such as survivor benefits, if you know, God forbid, someone does die in action, those things are the Pentagon's call.
It's an interesting case because it really reminds us of how integration was initiated in this country to begin with. We think about the Brown decision, and it was a very important one, but it was Truman's executive order integrating the military that really got the ball rolling. That was an order. And whether the military wanted to integrate or not, and there's an argument to be made that culturally they may not have wanted to do that, they were under orders, and they did.
Well, you put it in the context of fighting as a segregated military in World War II, and there was a good argument to be made that the military effectiveness of the United States was hampered by the policy of racial segregation. President Truman heard that. He saw that there was a fairness issue there, that black troops fought as hard as white troops. They died just like white troops. And he made the decision in 1948 to integrate the United States military. Now, that was 6 years before the landmark decision in Brown versus Board by the U.S. Supreme Court. It was more than 20 years before most public schools in the South actually integrated. So, you know, the military has a history of being a little bit out front, but also a tool which the president can use to implement social policy by executive order using his own authority without Congress, just as President Obama took the steps to here.
You know, Chris, that also points to another interesting question raised in all of this, and that is whether or not social engineering, as some people would call it, can be done by order, or if we have to wait and allow time to take its course. And we see that in the case of integration, in fact, it was an order that got things rolling. Whether or not people wanted to do it, their hearts and minds followed once they were forced to do what was ultimately the right thing. And I wonder if that's some of that is in play here, where we're talking about allowing people to come along and understand the need for to recognize same-sex marriage. And it has to begin with an order. Chris?
I would absolutely agree with that. I'm not sure I would characterize it as a social engineering, but I think the bottom line is, this is also a readiness issue currently. It was a readiness issue back in the days of integration, and it is currently a readiness issue. Commanders around, and I used to be a commander, I understand this. Commanders all over the place understand that the last thing you want your deployed troops worrying about is whether or not their families are being taken care of back home, whether or not things on the home front are going well. That should be the last thing on their minds. So to treat our same-sex families differently and add that burden to our military members when they should be out there focusing on the mission at hand is a readiness issue. And the president was absolutely correct to have the DOD issue this order. And quite frankly, we are calling on the DOD. In fact, we are currently working with the ACLU, have joined efforts to circulate a petition that calls on the DOD to take action with these states and bring them in line with the DOD directives. And it's our understanding today, in fact, that there may be another state joining the ranks of these other three rogue states.
Tracy, how important is it to you that here in North Carolina, a gay marriage will be recognized in the National Guard?
Well, first of all, it's very important just because this is Donna's home state, and it was our home, and it still is our home. It hurts me that not everybody's going to get it, but, you know, two of the three reasons I went public was, one, to show, to shine a light on the gaping hole that existed with the benefits issue, and two, specifically, so nobody else would have to go through what I did. So these are huge steps, you know, and especially here at home, you know, some of the couples that first came to mind, specifically when I decided to go public with this, those couples are not going to be left out. However, there's still a lot of others that are, and it still hurts, you know. But here at home, yes, it's huge, especially in North Carolina.
Does this change anything for you, or is it too late for you?
That's a question that's yet to be answered. The third reason I had gone public, and two is to help effect change, but three was to get Donna's death certificate changed from single to married. I don't know if that's going to be as of right now, I'm not receiving benefits. The VA has accepted my application. However, they said it's on hold, for further review into that they are backlogged, but I'm not so sure that everything's not going to hinge on getting that death certificate changed. But that's what I ultimately want anyway, is getting that death certificate changed. And my wife, and our relationship, recognized the way it properly should be.
Tracy, thank you. And thank you for your service.
Thank you, sir.
Tracy Johnson, a North Carolina National Guard staff sergeant. Her wife, Donna, was killed, one of three National Guard members killed by a Taliban suicide bomber in Afghanistan in October of last year. Chris Rousey, National Guard liaison for the American Military Partner Association. Michael Biesecker is a reporter with the Associated Press. Thank both of you for being on the show as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Happy to be here.
Coming up next, we meet the Piedmont Laureate for Children's Literature and talk about writing for children. Stay tuned to The State of Things.